You don't have to live in the St. Louis area to take advantage of the great deals at Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale. You can purchase resources online, November 3rd through the 10th at cph.org. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on issues, etc. during the Concordia Publishing House's online warehouse sale, November 3rd through the 10th, cph.org. Shop online, cph.org. There's a lot of talk about rights when it comes to the entire debate surrounding same-sex marriage. Now, I'm no legal expert. I'm not a constitutional expert. I know that there are things that are considered rights to us that are unalienable. Those are the things that cannot be taken away from us. Even though they are taken away from us, we still retain them because, as our founding documents say, we have them by virtue of what? Simply being endowed with these by our Creator. A tip of the hat to the Creator as perhaps the origin of rights. There are rights that are granted to us, rights that we willingly give up. But what is meant usually in the debate over same-sex marriage when it is asserted, sometimes simply presumed to be a right of which some have been deprived? It's not a right to be gained, but one, it is argued that they've been deprived of all along. Maybe getting the cart before the horse. We're going to ask and answer the question, is same-sex marriage a right, and by what standard? Frank Turek joins us on this Tuesday afternoon, November the 4th. He's a regular guest, founder of crossexamine.org. He's author of the book Correct But Not Politically Correct and a forthcoming publication, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. And he's also written an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled Same-Sex Marriage, Stealing Rights from God. Frank, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me on.
When is it asserted popularly that same-sex marriage is a right of which people have been deprived legally up to this point? And that's usually the kind of the begging the question kind of assertion. What's usually meant by right?
Well, actually, I don't think many people really think it through. As you just pointed out, if there is such a thing as a right, it can only come from an authority higher than human beings. Otherwise, it's just one person's opinion against another. It's just, say, Mother Teresa's opinion against Hitler's opinion. If there is no standard beyond humanity, everything's a matter of opinion and there are no rights. Now, our Declaration of Independence, as you pointed out, says we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men were endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I don't think people really think it through. When they come out in the public square and say, we have a right to, say, same-sex marriage or a right to abortion or a right to whatever, they don't really make the connection that in order for someone to have a right, it must be something that flows from the nature of God. And I don't think you can make a case that God is saying that we ought to cut up babies in the womb or that we ought to promote relationships between two men or two women and call it the same as a relationship between a man and a woman.
So in other words, often that term right is being used as a word meant to express it's what I want to do and you have no business telling me I can't do what I want. Not a right, but a desire.
It is. It certainly is a desire. But the same logic that can be used for same-sex marriage can be used for any arrangement. I mean, if I am supposed to be permitted to marry the one whom I love, then I could say I want to marry my sister, I want to marry my mother, I want to marry five people, I want to marry my horse. You could say any one of a number of things. If that's the logic you want to use, now maybe you can come up with another argument for same-sex marriage that wouldn't also condone incest, polygamy, and a number of other arrangements. Fine, but don't use the argument that I just ought to be able to marry whom I love, because that proves too much. You know, I love a lot of things, but I only marry one person. And by the way, everybody has equal rights already. You know, in states that have marriage between a man and a woman, everybody has an equal right to marry somebody the opposite sex. That law applies equally to everybody, so nobody's being deprived of any rights.
Okay, someone might say, look, maybe it's not a right yet, but if we get the right laws passed, then it will be a right because our rights devolve from our laws. What do you say to that?
Well, if they devolve from our laws, then that means that anybody can take away your rights if they get enough people to vote against them. It means an activist court can overturn your right. It means a dictator can overturn your right. Well, that's not the definition of a right. A right is something you have regardless of what anybody else says about it. And that can, again, can only come from an authority beyond human beings, and that would be God. So, yes, we can put into laws and say they're rights, but they're not really rights if just human beings make this stuff up, because a right can be then taken away if they change the law in the future.
Frank, someone is listening and they say, look, you're just confusing, you know, church and state. You might have a religious argument for rights on your hands there, but we have a separation of church and state. Why do you say that objection really has no place or applicability here?
Well, first of all, this has nothing to do with the separation of church and state. Nobody's trying to legislate religion. Nobody's trying to say you have to go to a certain church or a certain mosque or a certain synagogue and do these things. That would be legislating religion. But we can't avoid legislating morality. All laws legislate morality. And the only question is whose morality will be legislated. You see, religion has to do with our duty to God. Morality has to do with our duty to one another. Nobody's telling anybody how they ought to behave religiously, or, you know, they have to worship a certain way or go to a certain church. But everybody's trying to tell one another how they ought to treat one another. That's legislating morality. Look, the other side in this debate is trying to legislate morality. They're trying to say that they have a right to abort their children, or they have a right to marry somebody of the same sex, and everybody needs to honor that right and even celebrate that right. So everybody's trying to impose morality. The only question is whose morality. And my point, Todd, is we ought not impose my morality. We ought not impose your morality. We ought to impose the morality, the one Jefferson said was self-evident. Look, I didn't make any of this up. I didn't make up the fact that men were made for women and women were made for men and babies come from their unions, and that a society can only be civilized when that particular relationship stays together as a whole. I didn't make up the fact that men and women perpetuate and stabilize society, whereas other relationships do not. I didn't make up the fact that a human being inside the womb is a human being. It's not just a blob of tissue. These aren't my morals. I didn't make them up. I'm just saying let's recognize them.
So talk a little bit about what is kind of in the past called nature's law, mm-hmm. or we might, in a rough sense, say natural law. Where does it speak here?
Well, in this case, the natural design of the man and the woman who come together to do something that neither of them can do alone, to bring forth life and then nurture that life into adulthood, no other relationship can do that. It's based on the natural design of the man and the woman and the fact that mothering and fathering are different. Mothering is different than fathering, and fathering is different than mothering. And unfortunately, all gay relationships deny their children either a mother or a father. So we're talking about the natural design of the human being, of human beings, and how when they come together, they do something that individually they can't do.
So there's also a when homosexual activists say, you know, you're just wrong about this, mm-hmm. that presents an opportunity to make a very important point. What is it?
Well, the question is, what's your standard of right? Because if you're going to say I'm not right, you must know what is right. And if they say that they have some sort of standard, what is it? Are you trying to say this is God's standard? Well, give me some evidence that God would approve of this. You just can't go around calling things not right unless you know what is right. Something can't be unjust unless you know what is just. And it's not just about knowing what is just. You have to justify why a certain behavior is just and right. And I find that people on these issues lack really any justification for their position. It's just more of an opinion. It's just more of an emotion. They try and call it a right so it sounds more authoritative, but there is no grounding for that right. There's no justification for what they're calling a right. It's merely just an opinion which happens to go against what we would call nature's law, natural law.
Now, what do you make of this, and I mentioned it at the beginning, and that is kind of the technique that I've noticed and many of others have noticed it as well. Instead of arguing positively for this kind of thing, like same-sex marriage, making a case for same-sex marriage, often the case amounts to, well, we want to, therefore it's our right. This is America, after all. But it's even more nuanced. The tactic is kind of to say, This should have been our right all along. It's not explicitly stated like this, Frank, but but you know where I'm going.
Yeah.
It should have been our right all along. It wasn't. We've been deprived of this right. All we're asking for is for that right to be legally restored. What do you make of that?
Well, legally restored according to what standard again? Where are they getting this standard that two men coming together is called a marriage? First of all, it's never happened in history before, and for good reason, because, again, this is based on the natural design of the man and the woman. Even in cultures which extolled homosexuality, like some of the ancient Greek cultures, they never would call a relationship between the same sexes marriage, because it just wasn't what a marriage was. A marriage is a man and a woman coming together. And two men or two women can't do that, or three men and three women, or a mix, they can't do that. That's not what marriage is. So nobody's being deprived of any rights. First of all, again, you need to have a standard that will say this is a right, and quite obviously that's not there. So nobody's being deprived of any rights. And secondly, everyone already has the same right to enter into a marriage. Now, they may think they don't want to do that, they can't do that for whatever reason, but everybody already has the same right to marry somebody of the opposite sex. That law applies equally to everyone.
What about equality? What about that argument?
Well, when people say equality, I always ask them, what do you mean by equality? What does that mean? And why should everybody be treated equal? Who said? Now, I believe people ought to be treated equal, but not every behavior is treated equal. Look, same-sex relationships and opposite-sex relationships are different. If they weren't different, nobody would be arguing for same-sex marriage. People would simply marry somebody of the opposite sex because, according to them, it's the same relationship as the same sex, and they would be done with it. They wouldn't even have to argue for same-sex marriage. The very reason they're arguing for same-sex marriage is because they know there's a difference between the relationships. Well, if there's a difference between the relationships, which, by the way, are behaviors, nobody's being discriminated against. Behaviors are being discriminated against. That's what all laws do. So these are behaviors that are being discriminated against. You treat equal behaviors equally. You don't treat different behaviors equally. That doesn't make any sense to treat different behaviors equally. You treat equal behaviors equally.
One more thing before we take a break, and that is, if someone says, look, you're limiting marriage, you're putting a limit on marriage, what's your response, Frank?
Everybody puts limits on marriage. Even the people who advocate for same-sex marriage believe limits should be on marriage, and they don't believe maybe in group marriage, polygamy. They don't believe in incestuous marriage. They don't believe in all sorts of different arrangements. They believe that just two people, regardless of their gender, should come together. They don't agree with three. They don't agree with four. They don't agree with incest, polygamy, any of these other things. So everybody puts limits on marriage. If there wasn't a limit on marriage, it would mean nothing. So everybody's putting limits on marriage. The question is, what limits should be put on marriage? What should be the definition of marriage? And I think we don't really define marriage. We simply recognize it because it's built into the natural order of creation.
So it is whatever a person holds to be kind of a valid definition of marriage, they are going to have some – everybody draws the line someplace. Is that your point?
Well, of course they do, and it's not up to me to define marriage or you. Marriage is what it is. It's based in the natural order of creation. Now, we may try and modify it through our laws and all that, but the definition of what marriage is what it's intended to be through the natural design of the man and the woman, nature. So that's how God created it. So if people have a problem with that, they ought not get mad at me or other people. They ought to be mad at God because he set it up that way, and God can take it. But it's just the way things are.
So these limits on marriage that people will say, look, we only want to go this far. We really just want same-sex marriage. We will stop there. Is there any logical reason, is there any logical stopping place once you relocate rights from a right giver or a source of rights that is transcendent of man into mere preferences or political opinion or majority rule?
Well, I haven't heard of any stopping point, but the main point here is that if you make marriage genderless, Todd, what you're saying is that marriage is no longer about children. Because if it's genderless, you see, in places that have same-sex marriage, like Massachusetts, for example, there's not same-sex marriage and natural marriage. There's just genderless marriage. And the problem is that when people see that marriage is genderless, the cultural understanding of marriage changes from something that's focused on children to something that's focused on just the romantic desires of adults. And when marriage is merely focused on the romantic desires of adults, what happens is that the children are left out in the cold. People don't get married when they have children, or if they do get married, they tend to break up at much higher rates. And marriage is no longer extolled as an ideal. And that's the problem. It changes the entire cultural and legal definition of marriage to exclude children. Look, if we don't take care of children in marriage, where are we going to take care of them? The government? They can't do it.
Frank Turek is our guest. He's founder of CrossExamine.org, author of the book Correct But Not Politically Correct, and a forthcoming publication, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. He's also written an article for the latest Christian Research Journal titled Same-Sex Marriage, Stealing Rights from God. When we come back, 10 more minutes with him, we'll talk about the intolerance of tolerance and a statement that he makes here. The religion of liberals is no more liberal than that of the most rabid fundamentalist. We'll see what he means by that after this.
First Heating and Cooling is a third-generation, family-owned company and has been serving the Metro East for decades. Erst is a Lennox and GeoComfort geothermal dealer and services all makes and models of heating and cooling systems. Now is the time for your heating system checkup. Whether it's service or maintenance for your existing heating or cooling system or a whole new system, you need to call Erst Heating and Cooling. Call them at 618-633-2244 or ErstHeating.com. Erst Heating and Cooling, Hamel, Illinois.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
You don't have to live in the St. Louis area to take advantage of the great deals at Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale. You can purchase resources online, November 3rd through the 10th at cph.org. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues Etc. during the Concordia Publishing House's online warehouse sale, November 3rd through the 10th, cph.org, shop online, cph.org.
Take a stand for life. Join Issues Etc. regular guests Matt Harrison, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, Robert George, and others for the 2015 LCMS Life Conference, January 22nd through the 24th in Arlington, Virginia. The LCMS Life Conference is held in conjunction with the National March for Life. For more information, click the LCMS Life Conference logo at issuesetc.org. It's your time to stand. The 2015 LCMS Life Conference.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about same-sex marriage as a right. Frank Turek is our guest, founder of CrossExamine.org. You'll find a link to CrossExamine.org at our website, IssuesETC.org. Click Listen on Demand. Frank, let's talk a little bit more about genderless marriage. And people, I think, believe, that we're talking about the kind of the fence sitters at this point, that we can compartmentalize marriage and children. You said before the break, there's really no way to avoid divorcing children from marriage if we redefine marriage or allow marriage to have its definition radically changed. What do you mean?
Well, the law is a great teacher, Todd, as you know. I mean, many people think whatever is legal is moral and whatever is illegal is immoral. I mean, just think of slavery 150 years ago. We basically went to war over slavery. How many people today do you think slavery or who think slavery is a good idea? Hardly any. Why? What changed? The law changed. The law helped teach people that slavery was really a bad thing. You know, we're less religious now than we were 150 years ago, but we have a better moral view on slavery. Why? Because we put a positive law in place. The same is true in reverse when it comes to abortion. In 1973, we had 50 state laws against abortion. Then 7 unelected justices in black robes overturned the will of the people in all 50 states. Now we're about evenly split on the issue. Why? Because the law is a great teacher. People think whatever is legal is moral. And the same thing is now coming true with regard to same-sex marriage. People think, well, if we promote same-sex marriage, it must be a good thing. and now it's a right, see? And so it's changing attitudes. And what it's also doing is it's causing people to lose their rights. They're losing their rights to religious freedom. They're losing their rights to parent their children as they want to parent them. They're losing their rights of association, their right to free speech, because they're getting shouted down and told that they can't believe what they believe anymore.
Okay, that's something I wanted to pursue with you, because it seems to me kind of a rule of thumb that if we assert rights that are not founded in a right giver, that is, we base our rights purely in preference or political rule, whatever it may be, then we will, in some, we can't hope to remain intact of those things that our founders called the unalienable rights. Is that what we're watching here, where people with religious sensibilities are being told that their unalienable rights simply cannot stand in the face of a newly invented right?
Yeah, in fact, Kai Feldbaum, who works for President Obama in the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission, realizes that there's an inevitable collision between so-called gay rights and religious rights. And she said, quote, "I'm having a hard time coming up with any case in which religious liberty should win." Think about this, Todd. There's two opposed positions here. One position is you must celebrate my same-sex marriage and recognize everything about my homosexual relationship. The other position is God and or my conscience won't allow me to do so. Is there any middle ground here? No, there can't be any middle ground. One is saying you must do it. The other saying there's no way I can. So you can't compromise on this issue. Either side doesn't seem to be able to compromise on it. So the only question is, which value is going to take precedence? Religious freedom, free speech, freedom of association, parental rights, or you must celebrate my same-sex union?
On the subject of religious freedom, if religious freedom must bow before a newly invented right to same-sex marriage, or, well, let's just keep it narrow on same-sex marriage, as we are watching it happen from place to place with business owners of religious sensibilities who are being either punished or in some other ways penalized for not, well, for basically refusing services. If that happens on the subject of same-sex marriage, if same-sex marriage can rob someone of their religious liberty, is the door open for any other invented right to do the same?
Oh, I would think so. And I'm not here just to talk about the slippery slope problem. I think the current problem is a problem already. I mean, you don't even have to go any further to say that if same-sex marriage is going to cause parents to lose their rights, individuals to lose their rights to freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom of association, we already have a problem. You can forget the slippery slope. We're already there.
Someone says, well, look, we're not asking them to change their beliefs, just their behavior. You can believe whatever you want. You can believe it's wrong, but you still got to provide the services for it. What's your response?
Yeah, that's the difference between worship and religion, the freedom of worship and the freedom of religion, which, by the way, the Obama administration and even Hillary Clinton has changed their language from freedom of religion to freedom of worship. You can do whatever you want in your church. You just can't apply it once you leave the church. That'd be like telling a pastor, you can preach on whatever you want as long as the people in the pews never obey what you say. What's the point of that?
What do you mean when you say the religion?
In fact, Todd, let me point one other thing out. Anybody can believe whatever they want in any country already. I mean, you can live in North Korea and believe that God exists, but the official state government says he doesn't. So you can believe whatever you want in any government, but that's not America.
Why do you say the religion of liberals is no more liberal than that of the most rabid fundamentalists?
Because they will hurt you if you don't celebrate what they do. This isn't about tolerance, Todd. This isn't about live and let live. This is, if you don't see it our way, we will hurt you. We will sue you. We will fine you. We will punish your business. We will shout you down by calling you all sorts of names, bigots, homophobes, and all these names which have no basis in reality. Because they don't want to have a reasonable discussion about this, because they can't really have a reasonable discussion about it, because it doesn't comport with reason, which even the liberal Bill Maher, whom I've been on his show a few times, you know, I don't agree with Bill on virtually anything, but he was right. He said, look, there's a Gestapo out there that will whack you if you don't toe the politically correct homosexual line. And he is a big advocate of same-sex marriage, but even he realizes it.
So is this why we see the tactics, whether there is success in the courts, whether there's success at the ballot box for the redefinition of marriage, the tactics always remain for some reason. And no matter how far that success seems to extend, the tactics always remain heavy-handed.
They are heavy-handed. It is intimidation. It has nothing to do with tolerance. It's if you don't agree with us, we will hurt you. And isn't it interesting, Todd, that the folks on the legal side of things are arguing that the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution somehow grants equal protection in the sense that a woman should have the right to marry another woman. Well, think about this. In 1868, when the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution was passed, women didn't even have the right to vote. Yet now these judges are telling us that somehow that particular amendment didn't give women the right to vote, but did give women the right to marry another woman. I mean, that is just bizarre reasoning, but that is exactly what's going on. Look, if you want to change the Constitution, then go through the amendment process and do so. And in fact, that's what they did. They gave blacks the right to vote properly in 1870 by using a constitutional amendment, and they gave women the right to vote properly by using a constitutional amendment in 1920, the 19th Amendment, I think it was. So if you want to change the Constitution, then go through the right process, but don't have an activist judge tell us that we can't vote to make our own laws.
Frank Turek is founder of CrossExamine.org, author of the book Correct But Not Politically Correct, and a forthcoming publication, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. He's written an article for the latest Christian Research Journal titled Same-Sex Marriage, Stealing Rights from God. Frank, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you so much, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to discuss Bible translations with Dr. Cameron McKenzie. We'll talk with Dr. Kim Riddlebarger of the White Horse Inn about where we find the teaching of the Trinity in the Bible. It's in there, and it's all over the place. And we'll discuss media coverage of religion. Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org will be our guest. You know, if you're actually upset, a little upset with what you've heard here in the course of our conversation with Frank Turek, you actually agree with him, at least in this sense. You don't like behaviors and ideas that he's advocating, and you're admitting, aren't you, by your dislike of it, that not all behaviors and ideas are equal, right? So at least maybe there's a starting point. You think something's wrong, even if it's what you've just heard. You still think something's wrong. Maybe we can work with that. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Redeemer Lutheran, Mandeville, Louisiana. Our Savior Lutheran, Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Louisville, Nebraska. Grace Lutheran, Warminster, Pennsylvania. Trinity Lutheran, Valonia, Indiana. Emmanuel Lutheran, Pensacola, Florida. St. Athanasius Lutheran, Vienna, Virginia. And Emmaus Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.